emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Hey y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't leave enough to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with the diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other natural supplements to help you stay healthy naturally. We are here live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. At 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That call-in number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen by phone or to ask questions. And if you have questions, punch 1 on your keypad there. That lets us know that you're in queue waiting to ask a question or add a comment. And finally, you can email us during the week, drtenpenny@gmail.com. That's drtenpenny@gmail.com and attorney@vaccinerights.com. This is March 16th already, 2015. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me this evening, as always, it's my gratitude and great pleasure to have Sherry Tenpenny with us. Sherry, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Alan. I'm good.
Boy, Sherry, we've had some real interesting progress, and I want to make sure we're not going to over or misinterpret it, but at least four states now have at least temporarily tabled or withdrawn their bills, four out of about 14, I think, that have some kind of a bill to either modify, restrict, or eliminate altogether the non-medical exemptions. So the feedback opposing these bills is apparently being heard, and I think in at least one or two instances there have been some concerns about the constitutionality of the bills, which I'm delighted to hear people paying attention to, because in years past that's an argument that has sometimes fallen on deaf ears. But I think it's a really good indication, because we're not seeing this sort of clean sweep that many of us feared might actually take place, where just suddenly all of these exemptions disappear.
So what was the fourth state? Do you know what sort of success they had in New Jersey today? Or did they have success?
It wasn't New Jersey. Yeah, I haven't heard anything from New Jersey. The four states that I'm aware of are Washington, Oregon, Maryland, and New Mexico that I've seen articles or heard information.
New Mexico is the one I didn't know.
Yeah.
So New Mexican was the newest one on the block. That's great.
Yeah, it's really terrific. Now, I say 4 out of 14, and that's the 14 states that the NVIC Advocacy Portal has listed on their homepage at nvicadvocacy.org as the primary laws to be concerned about. But I think, as you're aware, the NVIC is tracking over 110 bills, vaccine bills, in 36 states. So there are many other issues here for us to be become aware of and be concerned about, but clearly not a clean sweep coming out of the gate. So I think this speaks really well, bodes well, at least as a initial starting. That just doesn't mean that bills won't be rewritten and reintroduced, but it's a good indication. It's a real good indication. I'm feeling real good about it and feeling like it's a success. And I hope that some of the other states that are still considering one version or another of these bills are made aware of or paying attention, because I think it could potentially encourage more legislators in other states to be hesitant as well. He said optimistically.
I hope. Exactly. I think that it's a little premature to roll up our sleeves and start high-fiving and clinking glasses. But I do, because I know that the woman who was in Oregon who withdrew the bill came online Friday and said she will not stop until she increases the vaccination rate in Oregon, which currently stands at 93%, which says to me that there are people in those positions who do not understand personal rights. They don't understand vaccine injury. They don't understand what they are forcing people to give up to do in terms of bullying and maybe being, people that they're not respecting in their own districts. And so I think that it's great that there's four states who are at least temporarily withdrawing, but I want all of the listeners out there to keep the pressure on and to keep your eyes open, because we won't know, that expression, Alan, that says, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. Well, it ain't over until these sessions go home for, summer break.
Well, you're absolutely right, Sherry. This is at best a preliminary feedback from the legislatures around the country, and we have a long ways to go. But even more so, even if in whatever states, and hopefully all of them, but in whatever states where we're successful, where these bills end up dying and never coming up to a vote or are voted down, in any states where that is the final outcome for the current legislative session, you know, that would be something to briefly high-five and clink the glasses, as you say. But, you know, we're a long ways from being done. I sat down, gosh, it's been a few years ago now at this point, probably prompted by the swine flu pandemic and all that went with that. And I sat down to make a list of what I felt were the state-level vaccine legislative agenda items. And I surprised myself over a period of a few days. Every time something came to mind, I would go at it. And I've got over a dozen different legislative agenda items. I've got a list of those at the vaccinerights.com website for anyone who's interested. But I think we need to, even if we are successful here, not rest on our laurels, but we need to pick up this ball and run with it in the other direction. For example, if you're in a state that only has medical and religious, we need to have a philosophical exemption. If you're in a state where there's, and this is happening all over the country, where healthcare workers are being pressured into getting flu shots or losing their jobs, we need to have laws at the state level saying that they can refuse on medical, religious, or philosophical grounds without any penalty, for example. And I only know one state, and that would be Minnesota, that actually has an exemption that is available if there's a declared emergency. In most states, if somebody declares an emergency, and they can do that whether there really is one or not, if they declare an emergency, your routine exemptions go out the window. So there's just a long list, Sherry, of things that we need to go forward with. And what's happening right now with all these different bills all over the country is something that I was suggesting that we try to do 4 or 5 years ago. Now, I didn't say this very loud and to too many people, and maybe that was a mistake on my part. But I think what we need to do is to have a variety of different kinds of bills introduced in multiple states, and let's put them on the defensive for a change. But we got our hands full right at the moment. So that's something for us to keep in mind, perhaps, in the not-too-distant future. But let's take care of these bills that are, you know, on the table now in the states where they're still on the table, and make sure we don't allow this agenda to push any farther than it already has.
Yeah, I think that it's really important that we do that, Alan. I think that we just keep our eye on the ball for right now, and thank everybody out there. Thank every listener, everybody who reads our Facebook pages or gets our email alerts. Thank every single person who took the time to look at the information and pick up the phone call and call their representatives and to let their voices be heard for health freedom. And, you know, I talked to somebody yesterday who is a good friend of mine from the Washington State area, and he was telling me that a lot of his friends are in the, you know, rather either in the pro-vaccine camp or they think vaccines are okay, or at least they feel like their kids need to be partially vaccinated. But even those people are coming out and saying it's just wrong to force somebody to be injected with something against their will and to take away their freedoms. And when the science is still out and there are disputes and arguments, that, you know, people should have a choice. And so I think that we're starting to engage a different audience. And, you know, Alan, every single time that I've seen the government do something like this, ever since SARS and then bird flu and then swine flu and then my big fiasco with Australia that was just a few weeks before this whole measles thing broke here in this country, every time that this happens and it becomes very loud and big and broad, millions of more people wake up and start questioning vaccines that didn't even, the thought never occurred to them prior to that to even start questioning it. So I keep saying, and I've said this for years, and you know I've said it previously when you and Mayor had the show, was that sooner or later the 100th monkey is going to show up. And at that point, when the 100th monkey shows up, everything just starts to shift. And people who, instead of those who don't vaccinate are in the minority, we're going to shift to where those who do vaccinate are in the minority. And there'll be more and more children and more adults who are not subject to the complications and side effects of vaccination.
I think you're absolutely right, Sherry. I remember hearing as far back as the swine flu pandemic, I remember a mother from Washington State called me and she said, I don't have any problem with vaccines, but what's going on with this swine flu stuff? And even people, as you said, even people who weren't previously you know, in the concerned camp with vaccines, the further they push the agenda, interestingly enough, and the more aggressively they do, the more people who were not previously on board who say, wait, what's going on here? And, you know, once that door is open, even a crack, many of those people will go down a path that they didn't even know was there, and they will be coming perhaps over time even more fully on board. But I heard something that really surprised me. I turned on my radio. The only talk radio show I get from a little portable radio in my kitchen in the mornings is one with Glenn Beck show. And even Glenn Beck, who was clearly coming from a what we would think of as an uninformed vaccine position, the mainstream view, even he was saying in response to the measles scam that people should have a right to decide, and he saw it purely as a freedom issue. And he follows that up by saying, now, we as society have a right to say that if you're not vaccinated, your kid can't come to school, and if you're not vaccinated, you can't come to work. And what is so amazing to me is that even though he clearly has, you know, this mainstream view about the medicine and science, that despite that, he was still saying this is a fundamental rights issue and people should have a right to make those decisions. So as much as I'd like to be a guest on his show and explain why the other things he said don't necessarily make sense, I was just intrigued. And so just again, underscoring what you're saying, Sherry, that you don't, we're at a point now where not only the anti-vaccine people are saying you should have a right to choose, and that, of course, bodes well for our agenda because we could use all the help we can get, even though more and more people are waking up all the time. And I do think we're going to hit that critical mass point, that 100th monkey, where it's a matter of time. We're moving in that direction. But we can get, maybe we'll get to that point with respect to the idea of a right to choose before we get to that point with respect to people really understanding more fully and clearly the underlying issue.
Well, we're going to get there, Alan. I think that we've got people that are really passionately wanting to defend their rights and wanting to defend the rights of their children and wanting to defend their ability to pick and choose. And I think that they've been hearing this pretty loud and clear. And so that's really encouraging. So how about if we did you have any really pressing things you wanted to talk about tonight? Because I always feel like we underserve our listeners. We get so many people that call in and want to talk, and we don't quite get to those people. And what if we spend a little extra time tonight with them?
We can do that, and just remind anyone who would like to make a comment or ask a question, you've got to push one on your keypad there so that it tells us that you're wanting to participate as opposed to just listening, because we have a lot of people who do call in just to listen and are not calling mm-hmm. in to make a comment or ask a question. But I did have one thing, Sherry, I wanted to mention. Don't have to go into detail unless there's interest or questions on it. But one of the things that I have done to try to help legislative activists over the years and recently and currently is when there's a bill that, from my perspective, has constitutional issues, that the bill is either unconstitutional or raises serious constitutional questions, then as I'm able and time allows, I will write a constitutional analysis, a legal analysis. Now, I've learned from past experience, much to my disappointment as an idealist, that there are a lot of legislators who really don't care whether we think a bill is unconstitutional or not. And the practical reality is they can pass any bill they want to, whether or not it's constitutional, because officially a law is not unconstitutional until a judge says so. So laws, however egregious they may ultimately be, they are presumed to be constitutional unless a court says otherwise. So the legislators can pass any law they get the votes for, whether it's constitutional or not. So the constitutional analysis is not necessarily the end-all and be-all, but it can be another piece of information to persuade your legislators to support or oppose a bill, depending on what the case is. Well, there's so many bills in so many states, and the language in bills changes over time, that it finally dawned on me, Sherry, that I'm just not going to be able to keep up with every bill in every state and every change in every bill and so forth. And when I stepped back and looked at these bills collectively, there's really only about four primary types of bills in these different states. And so I have written some documents now by category and not state bill number. So these are available, linked from the homepage of the vaccinerights.com website. So real quick, I'll list the categories, and then we can be happy to move on to anything else there is to talk about tonight. There's always more to talk about than we'll ever have time to get to. But the categories, real briefly, if some of the bills are to add the so-called vaccine education requirement. All three of the West Coast states already do that. And in my opinion, those bills are unconstitutional, or at the very least, it raises a serious constitutional question. So I have a document now that explains why that's unconstitutional. That can potentially be a something that people can use, and people are welcome to use, to persuade their legislators not to pass one of those bills. If you're in a state that already has a religious exemption, but they want to add a member, add a requirement that you've got to be a member of an organized religion with tenets opposed to vaccines, or you've got to have a member of the clergy back you up. I think that's what New Mexico was doing, what Illinois wants to do. That is pretty blatantly unconstitutional. But we've got to bring it to the attention of the legislators so they won't know that. In some cases, like New Jersey, maybe the only one that I know of anyway, where they've already got a religious exemption, but now they want to add a requirement that you have to state your religious beliefs. That requirement itself is not unconstitutional, but it raises constitutional questions about the way that those kinds of laws are implemented. So again, I've got a document that talks about that. So just different documents there for the different issues that are showing up in these different bills, and people are welcome to use those, share them with their legislators to as another tool among other tools to help fight some of these bills.
That was great. Thanks for taking the time to do that. That's great.
Oh, well, you're certainly welcome. It's, you know, I have a unique perspective on the issue just from, you know, there are something like 140 attorneys that take vaccine injury and death cases, which I don't do, and I'm really glad that there are others who do. I'm not sure I have the emotional fortitude, frankly, to take on those kinds of cases. But there's just not anybody else out there focusing on the exemption and waiver and rights aspect, and at least at the level that I'm doing it. So I'm in kind of a unique position to offer some of these things, and happy to do so. Well, I don't see any callers in queue right now, Sherry. Anybody asking, you know, to share a comment or question? Are there any other issues that have gotten your attention? And if not, I would be happy to talk about some of the recent issues that have come up in the news.
Yeah, why don't you bring up a couple of newsy things that we can talk about? That would be a good place to start.
All right, I have a vaccine news page. There are actually a number of sites that contribute and post vaccine news articles, and none of us gets it all. So, you know, you can probably go to two or three or four different sources, and also Yahoo groups and Facebook pages are real good about posting news items. But, you know, Sherry, as soon as we said that, I see we do have a caller. So if you don't mind, why don't we go ahead and go to the call? Oh, a couple of callers. Okay. They're ready to talk now.
There you go.
Just mention the news, and they'll all start chiming in here. Let's go ahead and go to the callers, because, Sherry, we have had some shows where we didn't get to all the callers, and I always feel bad when we don't have time for that. So let's go ahead and grab some callers while we've got them right there. We've got somebody with area code 347. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Sherry. It's Moshe Khan again. How are you doing?
Good.
Hi. Well, how about we need strength is in numbers. We need to make more, as Alan said, we need to make more people slowly but surely aware of the fact and the truth. And telling people, just ask your pediatrician to show you the package insert. You should see the way they change colors. No, just come in with a, if you can have something with a hidden camera showing the way this MD changes mannerism, color and post those on YouTube.
There's an underlying question there. I don't know if you were asking a question, but I'm going to address a potential underlying question, and that is, should you confront your pediatrician, or maybe confront is even the wrong word, but, you know, can you, you know, some people have reported trying to have a conversation, you know, an intelligent, mature discussion and ask questions, and some pediatricians are just not, or other doctors are just not really receptive to that. But I think one of the best starting questions would be the question, well, what's actually in these vaccines? Can we look at a package insert together or something like that? And you're right, it would be fun to have, you know, a hidden camera to see how some doctors respond to questions that you and I know many of them probably just don't have the answers to. Whether or not or when, you know, it's appropriate or a good idea to do that might be a separate question. But, Sherry, what are your thoughts on that? Because, of course, you're the only one of us here with medical training, and I think you've commented in the past about how doctors or medical school students don't really get a lot of training on vaccines. Does that leave them in an awkward position when parents or patients ask, you know, what we at least would consider to be appropriate questions?
Yes, it does. And usually they either respond by shutting down the questions altogether, or they, if they engage it, generally the parents don't have enough depth of information to go past maybe two or three rounds. So I had a patient tell me one time, this was quite a while ago, several years ago, that she had studied up and she really thought that she had learned a lot and she knew things and she wanted to go in and have this conversation with her pediatrician. And she said three rounds into the questioning, she said she felt that she was out of information and she was cornered. And she said, I wish that I could have Dr. Tenpenny in my pocket to come in and do these things. So...
well, Sherry, I was going to say there's a market for a product there. You need to create the pocket tenpenny, and we'll sell that on your website, and I think you'd sell millions.
Well, maybe so. But I think that the point is that it doesn't take very long to either run into a situation of antagonism, and that doesn't bode well for either party, or that one, that even if the parent knows a lot, if you're trying to push the doctor into the corner and impress them with how much you know, I mean, that doesn't do well with the doctor-patient relationship either. And so I would say that if you really wanted to confront your pediatrician, so to speak, or have a more open dialogue, I would try to schedule an appointment out of office hours or at the end of the day after office hours and say that you wanted to spend get a half an hour of the doctor's time to sit down and discuss this outside of the office visit time. Because, you know, there have been some people who have said that this big push for changing this to mandatory vaccinations is because the physicians are so frustrated and it's so time-consuming to deal with these patients' questions. You know, physicians are now, most of them are not independent business people. They are employees of a hospital system. They are on quotas. They have to generate X amount of dollars and see X amount of patients and X amount of lab tests and x-rays. And they have to generate quotas in order to keep their job. And so if they have scheduled 10-minute office visits, which is 6 people per hour, to plow through their day, and each one of those people takes an extra 10 minutes because they've got questions about vaccines that, as far as the doctor is concerned, are irrelevant, well, you can see how that quickly backs up the day and pushes it backwards and makes everybody frustrated. And so there have been some rumors going around that part of this legislative push has been instituted by hospitals and who are the employers and some of the physician groups who are adamantly pro-vaccine to take the discussion off the table by making the vaccinations mandatory. And so I can't say I have proof of that, but I know that I've heard that argument from several different independent sources, and it does make sense to me. It does make sense to me.
Well, if you were the other side of the game, that's probably what you would do.
What's that?
But haven't doctors also been getting education about how to deal with those, you know, pesky parents who ask questions?
Oh yeah,
you know,
there's been a
I think
lot of articles that have been there have been a lot of articles that have been published in public health journals and in vaccine, and this goes back several years with articles giving doctors language on and training them. There's even CME seminars, of continuing education seminars, training doctors in how to deal with these pesky non-vaccinating parents.
Well, actually, it was in the Wall Street Journal list 2 weeks ago. Paul Offit is making a special trip to Brooklyn just for the purpose of training doctors how to fight off parents.
Right.
To train doctors in what?
How to deal with parents who refuse to take vaccines.
Oh, deal with parents. Yes, yes. Well, this is not new. This has been going on for 4 or 5 years anyways. And there have been many articles that have been published in the public health journals and in the vaccine journals and family practice journals and even in the New York Times and the Washington Post, you know. There have been articles talking about how to deal with these insanely uncooperative, conspiracy-type parents who refuse to vaccinate their children. So that's really nothing new. And you're absolutely right, Alan. That's been coming for a while.
Well, I've got the training package. You know, they can pay me half as much as they pay Offit and the other people to do these trainings. I've got the one word, you know, the one sentence training package here. Doctors, when these parents raise questions, agree with them. No time wasted, just a couple of seconds to say, yep, you're right. And then everybody's happy and gets on with their day. I mean, that's really all there is to it, right, Sherry? I mean,
yeah,
seems
right
that way to me.
Start, you know, vaccines discussed, parents refuse to move on.
That's
exactly.
The most efficient use of a doctor's time.
There you go. We've got to run to break here. Moishe, we always appreciate your calls. Thanks for calling again this evening. We're going to run to break here and got a couple other callers on the line, so we'll get to them right after the break. You are listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, attorney Alan Phillips. We will be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits.
Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Attorney Alan Phillips. And just real quick here, some quick announcements. You can find online Dr. Tenpenny at drtenpenny.com and several other websites, but one of the biggies here, one of my favorites, vaccinereserchlibrary.com, vaccinereserchlibrary.com. With over 6,500 and counting peer-reviewed published medical studies showing problems with vaccines, anytime somebody says there's no research out there, just send them to this site. That's what I always do. And you can find me at Vaccine. Sherry, I've gotten a lot of mileage out of sending people to this website. You know, it's just so much easier to say, well, there's 6,500 studies supporting my view than it is to try to get into the details sometimes, especially when I'm not a medical person myself. But, yeah, Sherry has several websites, and those are two of them. They're all important, but those are two of them. And then, of course, I'm at vaccinerights.com. And just want to let you know that there's also a Tuesday night show that I host called The Vaccine Agenda, also on blogtalkradio.com. It's at blogtalkradio.com/thevaccineagenda, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. And you can, drawing a blank here, the Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, an ebook available at vaccinerights.com that will help you understand how the legal system works and your rights about vaccines as well. Sherry, gosh, the switchboard is just jumping back and forth this evening. We had two other callers before the break that disappeared during the break. So if you would like to make a comment or ask a question, please hit 1 on your keypad there on your phone. Ah, there we go. Somebody came back. All right. We have a caller from area code 812. You are on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Alan. This is Joe DeCochrane again. My question would be for Dr. Tenpenny. I've been reading on the CDC, some of their MMWR reports, and it seems to me that one of the things that people say is these people can or these children can't be vaccinated, and therefore they want everyone else to be vaccinated. And you start looking on there, they give the MMR between 12 and 15 months, but they go on to mention that they can give it as early as 6 months. If they're going out of the country, I think was the example they gave for that. However, it doesn't really – they kind of got to – didn't say why they didn't do it earlier. Now, then they went on and mentioned about passive immunity from the mother. And it kind of said that they were not giving it to them because they were afraid that the passive immunity for the mother would, I guess, bind up the with the vaccine – the virus there. Do you know if that's actually why they're not doing it?
You mean why they're not giving the MMR to 6 months old?
Well, not just 6 months. I mean, they give the hepatitis B. Why aren't they giving the MMR? I guess I'm looking at this from a standpoint of, well, you've got to get it because they can't get it. Well, why aren't you giving it then to them then? I guess I'm looking at what's their reason for not doing it. I read that they mentioned, well, the mother's passive immunity, and they kind of indicated that it would, I guess, not be effective.
Well, how they define effective. Effective means I inject you with something, and mm-hmm. and then I can draw your blood a couple of weeks to a couple of months later, and you've developed an antibody. And
yes.
So part of this collision course, so to speak, is that the mother's antibodies may give the false impression to the blood test that the vaccine, quote, unquote, took, and
uh-huh.
it may not have. It may have been too early for them to have an antibody because they define immunity and protection is purely the presence of an antibody. And so if you give that's a false assumption, by the way, because that's their definition of being immune, but it is not the definition of being protected. And so they want to know for sure that if they give this vaccine, that they're going to develop the antibodies. And if they draw the blood later and the antibodies there, I don't think there's any way to distinguish between the antibody being created by the vaccine, which should be is supposed to be more long-lasting, versus the antibody that may have been passing through the breast milk from the mother. And so they can't assure that the vaccine took. And I think that that's the reason why they wait until a year, because most children, not all, but most children are past breastfeeding at that period of time. And so then if they give the vaccine and then they test it to see, to get a titer to see if it's there, then they can say with some level of assurity that the vaccine took. And in my opinion, that means that they have developed this marker of contamination that we have no idea whether or not it's going to protect the child from getting sick or not.
Okay.
And that's the reason why when back in the day when measles was very endemic and everybody had measles, when they grew up and became mothers and they could pass the real antibody through the breast milk to the babies that were very young. But now a lot of the mothers, if they've got an antibody to measles at all, the one that came from the vaccine through the breast milk is not the same type and doesn't have the same strength and integrity of protection as what the antibodies that came through the mother who actually had the disease, because the mother also passes T helper cells and cytokines and other types of white blood cells through the breast milk that it helps to keep the baby, the very young children, from getting sick.
Okay. So is this almost strictly through the breast milk then? Do you know?
I'm not following you.
Are they getting the antibodies or the protection strictly through the breast milk? That there's no blood going through the placenta, I guess, that would possibly be the cause of it. I guess my point is that not every woman breastfeeds, and for that to make the assumption that, oh, we can't give it to them earlier because we're afraid that they won't get the right response that we want to is, to me, it's a big assumption. I'm for breastfeeding. I think that's great. But I'm just getting to their argument, I guess, why they're telling us you have to get vaccinated to say because they can't. Well, to me, I don't see that why they can't. I understand what you're saying, but in that case, then why would you give the hepatitis B at one day?
Well, part of the difference is because the other thing is that giving the live virus vaccines, so MMR, chickenpox, oral polio, those are all live virus vaccines, and they behave differently. And so, I haven't read, I probably should read more to answer your question more thoroughly about giving the MMR vaccine to very young children. But I think it has a lot to do with it's a live virus vaccine, and the live virus vaccines tend to be more robust. And the other thing is one of the main side effects that we know for sure from the MMR vaccine is a fever. And children that are very young that have a fever, you have to worry about sepsis and you need to worry about meningitis. And so is this just a vaccine reaction or is this some other type of infection that's being caused that we need to put them in the hospital and work them up for sepsis? And so it's a lot more complicated than what you might think.
Okay. Another thing, I think you hit the nail on the head. When we had our daughter and we took her to her pediatrician, you're exactly right as far as most doctors do not want to listen to you. I actually have, at that time, I had read up on it and had, what the CDC documents and science reveal, the risk benefits. I had like 4 DVDs in the book, and I was actually willing to sit down with her. I said, we want you to be on the same page with us. And she didn't even look at me. She just said, well, you can get anything you want all over the Internet, and I've seen kids suffer. And that was it. Of course, we changed pediatricians after that, but and the next one, her comment was that, I believe that God created vaccines to save lives, and I pointed out to her, well, so wouldn't God just skip the middleman and not create the disease in the first place?
Wouldn't God have given you all the tools that you needed to fight off the infection? I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of those cartoons on the internet where it shows, you know, there's a scientist there with test tubes, and there's like a window that opens to heaven, and it's God or St. Peter, it's God standing there saying, "Oh my goodness, I created the baby. I forgot the immune system. Please vaccinate them."
Yeah.
You know.
God was really new at the creation thing when he was making people. He made a lot of mistakes, so now he's got to throw down other things to, you know, correct those errors.
Well, I will tell you that our oldest, when we told him that we didn't want her vaccinated, and they brought around the hepatitis B, it was a one-page deal, and it had, you know, hepatitis B is, you know, endemic around the world, whatever, and it said, for these reasons, and it was 1, 2, 3, you should have your child vaccinated, and one was the mother's hepatitis B positive, my wife wasn't. Number two was she's an IV drug user. She's not even 24 hours old. Number three was she was having unprotected sex, again, not even 24 hours old. Well, one of the nurses came in and said, well, you haven't signed this. And I said, no, she's not to get it. And she said, well, have you read this? And I actually had it right next to me. I said, I picked it up, and I said, well, have you read this? And I read them off just like I did to you. And I said, how does this apply to her? And, of course, she didn't say a word to me and walked out. But it's hard to deal with it at times with these people over these issues. But one last question for you, Alan, and also for Dr. Tenpenny. As far as talking to our legislatures, our legislative body, should we – I heard it was either on Mike Adams or it was Barbara Lowe Fisher. Should we actually, I mean, confront them and say – it does the state own our body, and approach them at that kind of an angle and saying, do you believe in the state owning our body, meaning they can do whatever they want to us? Do you have any insights for that?
I've got an opinion about that, but I've heard, you know, different things from different people about different people have different ideas about how you should approach legislators and what you should do with it. And Sherry went to a course about this, so I'm sure she'll have, things to share from that. To one degree or another, if you're comfortable going in with some flexibility and assessing, you know, the situation and see what you think works with a particular legislator at a particular time, that might be the hypothetical ideal if we had the ability to read them well and understand or sense, if for lack of a better word, where they can go with the subject. But my first thought with the way that you worded that, Jody, was that I would go in not so much confronting or challenging the legislator about what do you believe and what do you think, but rather just say, here's what I, as your constituent, believe or think or what have you. And because their job as a representative is to listen to their constituents and to represent their constituents, although, of course, they have the option and flexibility to do what they think is right, even if, majority of their constituents don't agree with them. But I think a couple of the key points for me just in general is that you need to be, you know, clear, concise, not overwhelm them with lots of facts and information. You're not trying to convert them to anti-vaccine. You're just trying to help them understand what very few of the key important issues are. And you use factual points that you have references for. And in general, I know Don Richardson with the NVIC Advocacy Portal has said, just give facts, don't share your opinions. But some of this might be opinion kinds of stuff. And the question of, does the state own your bodies? You could have people argue that point different ways, and that is sort of an opinion-type idea. But I don't see anything wrong with taking a firm stand and saying, I feel like, you know, if this bill passes, it will mean the state owns my body, and I don't think the state should do that or has the right to do that or whatever. I don't see anything at all wrong with, you know, offering an opinion in that respect. Sherry, what are your thoughts on this? And we got a couple other callers we need to try to get to quickly if we can.
I think it's a really long discussion, and I think that remember that your legislators really have a very short attention span, and what you are there for is not to debate with them You are there to tell them how you want them to vote, and that you want them to vote yes or no, whichever the case may be, and that if they, and if so let's just presume that you want them to vote no on this bill, and you are there to say that I am here to tell you as your constituent in your district that I vote for you, that I want you to vote no on this bill, and if you do not, then there will be consequences, meaning I will campaign against you in your follow-up campaign. I will make sure that I let everybody back in your district know that you voted against your personal rights. I mean, because they care about that. To debate with them about these intricacies, about who owns your child and all this other stuff, that's just, it's just a side conversation that you may want to have when the season is over, when the legislative session is over and they're home. But the reason you are there is to persuade them and to tell them how you want them to vote. The rest of it is irrelevant.
All right. Thank you. Thank you again. I appreciate everything you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the call.
We appreciate your calls.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We're going now to area code 718. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I will say that, well, one thing I usually point out, and my doctor, I guess I'm very lucky, he, even though he doesn't necessarily agree with me, he respects my opinion, and I will say other doctors in the practice have backed off when parents are saying that they're not so interested. But I like to show what's in many packaging inserts is Section 13, where it says it has not been evaluated for carcinogenic, mutagenic, or impairment of fertility. And you explain that just as a reasonable parent, if a company will say they have not bothered to evaluate if their product can cause whether cancer or mutations of genes or possibly impair fertility, how can I be a responsible parent to give it to my child?
I think that's
it's
great.
Not necessarily challenging, but you're saying that, look, this company makes this statement. Sorry. I thought everybody was in bed. Okay.
It's okay.
You know, it's like basically you make a company makes a statement. I want to believe a company at their face value, at their words. And if they tell me this, where does this put me as a parent? To say, okay, you tell me that you don't know what your product can cause. I'm going to use it anyways and assume it's safe.
Or
most
worse,
I'm
just
gonna
use it anyway and see what happens, you know.
Is that the response? Well, wait. Have you done this already? And if you have, what was the response?
Well, my doctor just... Sorry. Okay, so basically, I just pointed it out, and my doctor didn't, you know, he didn't really respond, because I told him my biggest concern is formaldehyde. And he says, well, look, there's not another version, and he's, you know, if I want to do that, that's fine, you know. He's not pushing me. He's not really, you know. But he did tell me he still is vaccinating his children and himself. He's not, I guess he's a little bit afraid. He's, like, willing to read things, but then he's afraid of, I guess he's afraid of changing from what he's been taught.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, and you know it may turn out that if you do that 3 or 4 times. Ooh, that's a little loud.
Oh, I'm sorry about that little one next to me. He's almost 4 months old.
And so it's when you you might change his mind eventually. I mean, he might hear it from enough patients.
He heard somebody actually had brought him something once, and he had called me up because he knew I had stopped because I had asked him for 2 package inserts. And he's asked me, did I see this? And I said, yeah, I've seen it. But I see that, you know, even though he read plenty of information, he just wasn't willing to accept it. And it made him look at package inserts. But, I feel that it is becoming, at least in my area, I don't know about other areas, more, I guess the doctors, they're realizing they have 2 choices. Either you're going to back off and try to save what you can of your practice, or you're going to take a risk and push away.
Well,
I think there was an article that just came out a couple of weeks ago that actually said that more pediatricians were being more lenient with their patients because it was their customer base and they wanted to keep their customer base. If we change some of the language and talk about it as customers versus patients, then you know if you go into a store like Macy's, I mean, or you go to Target, what do they say? The customer's always right? Why is it not like that when you go into the doctor's office because you're labeled as a patient and you need to be told what to do? So I think that if maybe we start looking at ourselves when we go to the doctor like we're a customer, then we should be listened to accordingly.
Right. Well, and, you know, doctors who are in areas where they have a lot of parents doing that are going to be faced with that question. Do you change your practice in order to accommodate your patients, your customers, or not? Let's switch on over. We got one other caller. I want to try to get in at the last couple of minutes here. Area code 210, you're on the air. We got about 3 minutes here.
That would be enough. Good evening to both of you. This is Dr. Kulish from San Antonio. Thank you. I wanted to point one thing quickly to Dr. Tenpenny. I'm tracking events in several European countries, Belgium, Poland, Holland, and Germany, and several others. And there was a situation that in Warsaw, Poland, there was a citizenship organization called QLT Foundation that had one of the topics for their monthly meeting was vaccinations and possible side effects, adverse events, and the auditorium that they were always renting for their meetings has been cancelled because the topic was not according to the law of the state of Poland. And here was the commentary: well, it happened to Tenpenny in Australia, it happens to us in Poland. Well, we are in good company.
That's marvelous. Thank you.
I told you that some time ago that you are better known around the world than our president. But that was really pretty cute. And they literally telegraphed it to me, so I know, you know. And it was really really funny. But anyway, Fox, thank you very much for doing this. Thank you, and then you have a good evening.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
That
well,
was
there you
great.
Go, Alan.
Yeah, congratulations, Sherry. I think that is just one wonderful and fitting tribute. You certainly deserve some positive validation from around the world, given the negative responses you've got.
Yeah.
So that's terrific that Dr. Kulish shared that with us. So that's a really nice high note for you especially and for all of us to finish up here. Well, we've got about 1 minute, Sherry. You know what? With your permission, I'll just throw in one quick news item just to sort of fill the minute that we have left here. There are probably hundreds of them, but there's an article that I just became aware of today, but it was posted, I think, a few days ago on greenmedinfo.com. And the article title is Who meaning the World Health Organization, who puts Kenyan tetanus vaccine under police guard to avoid testing? And the first line of the article asks a question, and I guess we'll maybe have to leave it there, but maybe come back next week and talk about this if we have time. But it says, if the allegations are true, this is one of the biggest stories of our time. Did the World Health Organization try to sterilize Kenyan women of reproductive age by slipping into tetanus vaccines, a hormone with anti-fertility effects, and then try to cover it up? And I saw an article, gosh, several weeks ago now, that was talking about this issue in Kenya, and I've heard about this in years past in the Philippines and South American or Central American countries, but it has come up again most recently in Kenya. So we have a real interesting point there. Well, I've just used up that last minute that we had presenting it. But Sherry, any last closing comments here as we close down this evening's show?
Only to say thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you for everyone that spreads the word. And thank you for everyone who called your legislators and keep the heat on. We've got to keep up the energy. Don't give up yet.
Okay, that's awesome. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips, and various guest callers who we always appreciate on the show. We're here Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and rebroadcast proudly at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back next week, folks. See you then.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands.
heroes be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one